In the 1990 movie Jacob's Ladder, actor Tim Robbins was tortured by visions, memories, and flashbacks.
Where are you taking me? Where am I?
Where do you want to go?
Home.
This is your home. You're dead.
I'm not dead.
What are you then?
I'm alive.
The movie does not have a happy ending, and if it did, it would not have been much of a movie. All our fearful memories where the demons live are a rich source for ghost stories and horror flicks. If we could turn our brain into a whiteboard, though, and just rewrite our ugly memories to make them all sunny days, it might take the edge off Halloween. It could also help some people struggling with the past, like this person in Covina, California. My father, who's my best friend and my soul twin, bought me my first guitar, and he was instrumental in my singing and playing the guitar. But one evening, someone very close to my heart destroyed that guitar in the heat of an argument. That was in 2008, and I haven't picked up the guitar since. It hurt me so much that someone so close to me could destroy something that meant so much. Picking up my other guitars just reminds me of that night. I wish I could erase that memory. A listener from California. Researchers at MIT say they've figured out how to shift positive associations onto negative memories, though, by turning on and off some key neurons in mice. Do we really want to do that? David Moorman is an assistant professor of psychological and brain sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. David, welcome.
Hi, Don. Nice to talk to you today.
So that's kind of a scary capability. Looks positive at first glance, but then if you think about it, First of all, what have they done over there at MIT?
Well, so basically what they've done is they've figured out a way of, as you described, taking memories and manipulating the neural circuits that are underlying those memories. So in the example that you gave, you could take that memory about the listener's guitar and perhaps try and remove some of the negative aspects of the smashing the guitar from that memory and hopefully get that person back to the point that they can actually be able to have some positive associations with that guitar again.
How would something like this be accomplished? Would you take a pill? Would it involve surgery? I mean, it's too early to tell, obviously, but what kind of therapies would have this as a result?
Sure. So the kind of research that's actually being done now is still in preclinical phases. And so in these studies, they used mice as subjects, and they required intracranial surgery. So they actually had to put in a viral vector into their brain and use an optic fiber to use lasers, which is a pretty cutting-edge neuroscience technique. But obviously, it's not something that we'd want to try in the clinic quite yet. But there's a pretty quick jump that could be made where we might be able to think of non-invasive techniques that might be able to do this. So as you mentioned, we could come up with a pill that might be able to target these specific neural circuits and maybe use that as a way of non-invasively triggering them, or perhaps using some sort of a magnetic pulse that might go on from the outside that could actually be involved in manipulating some of these brain circuits.
So just one quick question on that. Do we have any therapy that turns off very selective neurons without erasing a memory or doing something, you know, more broadly to the brain, you know, putting it to sleep, making you drowsy, that kind of thing?
Sure. There's not a whole lot of options for that right now. Right now, most of our treatments are limited to things like pharmacology or psychotherapy, or in extreme cases, putting something like a stimulating electrode in the brain. So, for example, in the case of Parkinson's disease patients or treatment-resistant depression. But none of these solutions are very selective. And that's one of the real benefits of the research that's being done, that we're actually being able to really selectively target these networks that are associated with memories and emotions. And that, I think, is what's going to give us the power to solve these problems in the future.
All right. We want selective. But what if in the story about the guitar, instead of somebody who wants to be able to pick up the guitar, it's actually somebody who spent a lot of time, you know, torturing people in a prison, and they want to forget all the bad memories there. And now when they think of torture, or maybe they were a drunk driver or something and have a lot of guilt associated with that memory, they go through some therapy to make it feel like, okay, well, that wasn't so bad. Morally speaking, that's kind of dicey.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, whenever we talk about issues like manipulating brain circuits or manipulating memories or emotions, there's definitely going to be a host of ethical questions that we have to come up with to address it. I think, fortunately, right now, we're not at that state. We're still trying to figure out, basically, we're using these tools to figure out how the brain works. And I think that as it stands now, the possibility of treatment for some of these diseases is definitely worth pursuing the questions. Now, if it actually gets to the point that these could be implemented in the clinic, and probably even before that point, we definitely need to sort of bring in the bioethicists and the philosophers to come in and actually make some creative solutions for these problems. But I do think that there's no reason that we should sort of impede the progress of research just based on those concerns.
No. And I don't want to bring in a lot of annoying ethicists at this stage, but I am interested to know, in brain science, do scientists like yourself view a bad memory as something of a defense mechanism that alerts the organism to stay away from that experience, or is it viewed more as a breakdown that causes dysfunction with the pain that results from that memory?
I think that's a really good distinction to make. I mean, I think that there's definitely evolutionary and survival related benefits to bad things happening. Exactly as you describe, if something bad happens, you probably want to avoid that in the future. And so in that case, it's actually a very adaptive mechanism. But you can imagine that there are some circumstances like post-traumatic stress disorder or depression where that system kind of goes out of control. And that's the situation that we really want to be able to target with some of these new technologies. So not so much, erasing memories to make people feel good all the time, but to take people who maybe have gotten a little bit too far into some psychiatric trouble and bring them back so that they're feeling better.
So the better medical analogy is the immune system. We love the immune system. We want it there. But there are a lot of syndromes and diseases that are associated with the immune system gone awry. And that might be a way of looking at the brain here.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I mean, basically, we want to kind of keep things from going too far in one direction, too far in the other direction. And if we can kind of keep things regulated so that we're sort of maximally adaptive, I think that's a great state to aim for.
Now, it's totally unfair of me to ask this question, but do you have a memory? Don't tell me what it is, because I don't want to get you in trouble. Do you have a memory you'd like to erase?
I think I'm actually pretty okay for now. I've been pretty lucky in my life. I don't have too many negative memories, or the ones that I've had, hopefully I've been able to learn from, so they're good to keep around.
The happy, contented David Moorman, an assistant professor of psychological and brain sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Thanks so much, David.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.